Welcome to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, covering car culture and the automotive world with Shane Osborne, Brady Reif, and Steve, the producer, Johan. Let's see what's up this week.
Well, all right, let's just do that. Thank you, Mr. Quint. Here's what's happening Tuesday, November 19th, 2019. Brady Wright, Shane Osborne, and Steve, the producer, Johan, joining literally a galaxy of new listeners on this 112th
yes.
episode of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
112, huh?
You can find, that's right, 112 shows. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on iHeart Podcast. By the way, I mentioned this last week. I will continue. iHeart is now having awards. They are taking nominations for favorite podcasts in all different kinds of categories. So please, if you are an iHeart listener, go to iHeart and say nice things about us, because it would be really cool to win an award or just get mentioned. We're also on Spotify, and of course, we are on Podomatic.com. Make sure you like and follow our Facebook page for all the latest shows and stuff. Our first segment is always Back to the Blacktop, which is where Steve Johan drags, kicking and screaming, automotive news stories from the veritable social media in his brain and shares them with us here. What do you got?
Well, I don't know if it comes from my brain, but I do a lot of research. I spend more time than I should at this, but hey, it's all for a good cause. Big news from this week's LA Car Show.
Ooh.
First up, Ford unveils its much-anticipated Mach-E Mustang-styled SUV. That's right, an SUV styled with a nice Mustang-looking front end to it. And the Mach-E, which originally described as a Mustang-inspired SUV, is its first and long-range model with a 300 miles per charge promised those purchasing, which is an extended battery pack as well. So I think this is really cool. This thing is going to go up to 60 miles an hour in 3 seconds, just over 3 seconds, which is faster than the newest supercar out there. And what's interesting is they're also going to be offering a Mustang in an E version as well.
Yeah, I only have one problem with this.
Yes.
I mean, everybody's doing.
Have you seen it?
Huh?
Have you seen the new Mustang?
Yeah.
E version?
Yeah.
No, I haven't.
Yeah.
Oh.
See, here's my problem.
It doesn't look like a Mustang?
It looks like every other electric shaver SUV out there.
Yeah.
This thing,
so
I mean, it may be a great vehicle.
Why did they call it? I'm looking at the front end, and it looks a little like a Mustang.
They've sort of slammed a grill in there. Here's the thing.
No.
It's going to be an okay car. I'm sure it'll do well. It does not deserve, I'm standing on this, it does not deserve to carry the Mustang name.
No,
this thing is,
it's
just,
it's, yeah, it's a Fusion or a Taurus
it
or something.
It is called the Mach-E. That's what they call it.
But so Mach-E. I'm sorry. Good news for Ford. Please go ahead. Do another e-vehicle. That's just grand. Don't call it a Mustang. It's not a Mustang. It doesn't look like a Mustang. It doesn't deserve to carry that badge around.
It's like a Mustang, too. It just shouldn't have been called one.
Somebody on Facebook.
So are you saying the Mustang Mach-E itself doesn't look like a Mustang as
well?
I
don't think so.
No.
No.
It's
more like a CR-V Honda.
Yeah.
You got two different cars platforms.
Right.
One is the SUV, and the other one's supposed to be the E Mustang.
Yeah, it looks a lot.
And you're
like
saying
an
they
SUV.
Aren't using the same platform?
No,
not.
Well, then why call it a Mustang?
Exactly.
There you go. That's all right. We got it.
Gosh.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's universal.
Oh, geez.
It's unanimous. Yes,
yes.
It's a good. I mean, go for it. Do a thing. Don't call
just,
it. Don't sully the name of Mustang by.
If they would have called it an Escort GT,
sure,
it would have fit it perfect.
Sure, absolutely. Could have called
it an Escort.
It looks like an Escort.
It looks like an Escort.
Could have called it a German Ford or almost anything.
Yes.
But
So I'm looking at it, and you're right. I can't see the it looks kind of like it's got that front end, but now all of a sudden you're right. I'm looking at it,
it's an Escort. I'm sorry.
It is an Escort.
It shouldn't be called a Mustang.
I'm thinking you should have had it as a Mustang and dropped in the E platform in it.
That would have been okay.
That would have been really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then Tesla would have had a. Now I don't think Tesla has to worry. So
no but it's. I mean,
bring
your car
almost.
Out. Yeah, bring your car out. Throw it into the pool. That's just great. But don't call it a Mustang. It's not a Mustang.
Oh my gosh. Okay, guys, you convinced me. It does not look like a Mustang. escort.
And don't get us
yes.
wrong. We didn't do this to shoot down your story.
Yes,
your story is absolutely,
wrong.
Yeah.
No, just happened to see it yesterday.
But you just happen to know that Ford is not one of our sponsors. So,
yeah.
Yeah, they will be, though.
Yeah.
Yes, they will. Maybe they'll take some styling cues from everybody else who says, that is not what a Mustang looks like.
They should listen to us. Actually, you know, the net is full of
people commenting
aspersions
the same way
on
yes.
this thing. No
oh,
people are,
what were they thinking?
Yeah, even Chevy guys are going, nah, this is not.
Jeez. So up next is the latest offering from Ferrari called the Roma.
The Roma,
which is
it's a tomato.
Well, now there is an Italian here, which it's powered by a 3.9-liter turbocharged V8, dual clutch 8-speed transmission, putting out 612 horsepower
out of a 3.9. That's
wow.
actually
that's
pretty
really incredible.
That's not bad at all.
No, 0 to 62 miles an hour in 3.4 seconds. And its signature Italian styling is contemporary reinterpretation of the carefree lifestyle of the 1950s and 60s Rome, which Rome.
Of course.
And if you know, I have been, to be honest, I've been watching some of these British crime drama movies based in the 50s.
Sure.
And they have, in the early 60s, and they've got a complete different feel to them.
Mrs.
Like,
Peel, we're needed.
No, these are more espionage, CIA, MI5, you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, you don't think the Avengers was espionage?
Okay, there you go. But it's, they got...
You
got
to be a certain age to get some of my references, because they're really old.
Okay, what was the movie with... Charade. Okay, Charade, based in Rome, where they were running around.
Wow, wasn't that Cary Grant?
Cary Grant.
Yeah. You're older than I thought.
Oh, man. Okay, there you go. So that's kind of, it's patterned after those days, the carefree Cary Grant days.
I wouldn't have gone for the 50s. I mean, that's pretty ballsy. You get right down to it.
Well, anyway, so that's what they're patterning. That's where the name Roma comes from, not Roma Downey Jr.
And it's cool that, you know, that Ferrari should do new, you know, and more
They've
stuff
got
anyway.
A lot of new models
Yeah,
well,
on the tail end of Ford versus Ferrari, you know, the movie is out now.
Oh, I got to go see that.
Oh, man, I've gotten several people, a lot of people from the Steeds Car Club locally, they got together as a group and went down and saw it. And the reviews were pretty solid. They said, no, this is great. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
We'll have to go.
I'm going to have to go. Maybe we ought to go as a trio and do a little thing on it. And, well, the numbers are in from the Consumer Report for the 2019. It says 2020, but to be honest, these are not rolling out yet. But 2019, it's the Mazda MX number 5. Miata is the number one in safest cars.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't surprise me.
Best brand. And then number 2 is a Toyota Prius Prime, Lexus GX, Hyundai Kona, and then the Mazda CX-3, Lexus NX, Toyota 4Runner, Mazda CX-9. Mazda hit a lot of them. Well,
wow.
Mazda is a sleeper. They have always been a really well-engineered car.
Solid.
And if you look at the reports,
Lexus GS too.
They stand out really, really strongly. And, you know, it's not the first thing people think of, but they perform.
You know, and here's the thing. They are never the flashiest of the bunch, but you're right. They really are a solid vehicle.
Oh, engineering.
Compared to the least reliable in that one, Chevrolet Colorado, Chevrolet Camaro, Jeep Wrangler, Alfa Romeo Giulio, and Volkswagen Atlas come in the lowest.
And the new Mustang Mach-E. I'm sorry.
No.
I didn't mean to do that. It was a Freudian
Tesla
slip.
Actually did fall into the lowest 10.
Oh, did they?
Oh
no.
Due to the fires that
they've
had.
Well, yeah, I suppose. If your car bursts into flames, that's probably not a good
endorsement. When you consider how many are sold per accident or per incident, they don't sell a lot compared to some of these other vehicles.
No, but they're $70,000, and all of a sudden you're a pinata. I mean, that's not...
No, it's not.
I'm not a fan.
And SEMA's winners have been announced, and Mike and Jim Ring of the Ring Brothers took the top prize at the 6th Annual 2019 SEMA Battle of the Builders. For the second year in a row, guess what? Ding, 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 ding. 69 Chevrolet Camaro beat more than 300 entrants. So this is the second time in a year a 69 Camaro came in the top. And then, of course...
In fairness, it didn't win because it was a 69 Camaro.
No.
It won because it was built by a couple some really tremendous
talented
guys.
Man. We'll have to get them on the show. I'll work for that.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. We'll have more coming up on that, and we're going to be talking with race car driver Lynn St. James next on Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
Okay, forest animals, kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow, have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. River, how's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man.
I love it. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. Okay. Squirrel.
The forest has been preparing just for you. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
This is Robert Durf with the Porsche Club of America Driver Skills Program. Thank you for listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And just want to remind everybody that it's no fun unless it smells a little bit like burnt oil and burnt rubber.
Hey, car enthusiast, are you in need of a restoration and fabrication shop that turns old steel into rolling works of art? Then look no further than E-Company Customs Hot Rods and Restorations. E-Company Customs, that's Customs with a K, is the Northwest's fastest growing restoration and fabrication shop, providing frame-off restoration, custom mods, upholstery, rust repair, hand-done metalwork, motor work, body and paint, and a whole lot more. To book an appointment, visit them at ecompanycustoms.com or stop by their shop at 15002 Suite A, Highway 99, Linwood, Washington. E-Company Customs, providing a stress-free experience to both new and returning customers.
My mind's out of gear, and my heart's in overdrive. I've everything to fear. I ain't never been more alive.
Welcome back to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And today we are going to be talking with the race car driver, Lynn St. James. Hi, Lynn. How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Good. Hey, well, welcome to the show. We have to ask as we get started. We know that we have your website and several other things that have to do with, you know, your career and everything. But what I want to know is, you've been doing this for a while. I'm not going to say how long, but tell me what drew you to being a race car driver with all of the wins and other stuff that you have in the first place. Where were you when you first said, this is what I want to do?
Well, I'm not sure I ever, like, said, this is what I want to do. But, I mean, I was a huge fan and spectator first, and I went to the races. And I saw drag racing, and I thought that was kind of cool. And I saw the Indy 500, and I thought that was amazing. And then I moved to Florida and saw the 24 Hours of Daytona and the 12 Hours of Sebring. And that was the first time I saw road racing. And I just thought that was the coolest thing that I'd ever seen. And then I also noticed that there were, like, the way I put it is that real people drove race cars. I didn't quite see that in my previous exposure to the sport. But when I saw, some of the cars were not all that cool. I mean, they were some Porsches and Camaros and Corvettes that were not always, you know, the coolest cars compared to the Ferraris and the Maseratis and the really hot cars in the front. So,
sure.
And then it was kind of a process of understanding that real people did this, they weren't superhumans, and that you could become a member of a club, which was called the Sports Car Club of America, and you could kind of get involved, which I did. And then I realized that the thing that I loved to do more than anything was drive, as opposed to working on a corner or doing some of the other things that you do when you become a member of the club.
Sure.
So driving is what, was my real core reason why I said that this is something I really want to do. But it was a process. I mean, over years, it was a process.
You know, it's funny you mentioned SCCA. Back in the day, I was a member for a while, and I've been a turn marshal and a couple of other things. And I did drive a little bit, but not, at any kind of competitive level. And I was smart enough to realize that, it wasn't the thing that was going to necessarily get me. The only claim to fame that I have, if there is one at all, is that when I was a younger man, I spent about a year in Europe, and I actually went to Nürburgring, and I was able to drive my motorcycle around the track a couple of times on an open track day. And just knowing that people with a whole lot more skill than I had had been around that track was a big thrill for me, and that's as good as it ever got for me. Now, you actually went there, did you not?
Yeah, no, I did. It's funny because I thought about that when you said that, because I remember going to Nürburgring, and I think it was 1978 or 79.
Oh, man, really? I was there in 74. Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
But I just remember that, you know, you could buy tickets, and we bought a whole pack of tickets, you know, like a whole box of tickets, and spent days learning the track.
Uh-huh.
And while we were learning the track in our rental cars, you know, there were people in Porsches and families in, you know, vans or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
People just, you know, just cruising around. So it was pretty amazing to race at a track that has the history, like you said, and
yeah.
then to learn it driving a rental car and being passed by, sometimes even by buses and, you know, big vans and all that kind of stuff.
That's right.
Trying to learn the track.
People waving out the window. Hi.
Yeah.
It's a pretty amazing track. It's just, you can see it on TV, you know, even you can go as a spectator. It's not the same as driving around it. It's yeah, just amazing. It's yeah. So you became the first woman to win Indy 500's Rookie of the Year award. First one. And I'd like to hear about that, because
What kind of car did you drive?
I'm fortunate enough to have been
yeah.
to Indy as well. And of course, now that Roger Penske has bought the place, then, you know, I hope that he continues in the, you know, the vein that it's been. But how'd that one come about?
Well, it was another long process. But obviously, I mean, I remember going to the Indy 500 back in the 60s and seeing that race. I grew up in Ohio, so, you know, that was right not that far away.
Sure.
And it was the biggest thing, you know, in racing, and it still is. And so, but I never, ever, ever, ever thought that I would actually get to drive there. It never crossed my mind. But when I got to the opportunity to be a factory driver for Ford Motor Company, and I raced at Le Mans, and I raced, you know, and I had some wins at the 24 Hours of Daytona, and I got to race a prototype car and the Ford Probe, and, you know, I got some pretty heavy stuff going on, and all I really wanted to do was drive an Indy car. I just wanted to drive an Indy car, because I felt that okay. was the ultimate race car that I may have had an opportunity to just get my butt in and just feel what it was like, you know. And I bugged Dick Simon for probably 3 years, and he, in 1988, he finally gave me that opportunity. And, you know, I actually adapted to it pretty well, and I had a blast. And at the end of the day, he said to me, "We can do this." And I'm like, "Excuse me?
Did I hear you right?"
Yeah, he said, "We can do this." And of course, was the big part of that. And so then my dreams and my goals became very focused on maybe I could actually race an IndyCar. Well, when you try to go out and sell sponsorship to race an IndyCar, the only thing that people know that when you're going out and talking to sponsors is the Indy 500. And so that was the one that everybody was at least receptive to, but nobody,
sure.
of course, took it a long time before I got somebody that said yes. So, you know, I'm proud, but not necessarily would I ever recommend this, but the Indy 500 was only my second open wheel race and my first oval track race. So,
wow.
you know, I was really, to a certain degree, in over my head. But on the other hand, I had so much great racing experience, racing at Talladega, racing at,
sure.
at Le Mans. You know, I had a lot of high speed. So I kind of had this composite of experiences. And then I had a team owner who was a former driver and who was a great teacher and who really, you know, Dick has brought more rookies to the Speedway successfully than any other team owner. And so it was the best of all worlds that came together, and it kind of went pretty well.
You know, it's funny, you know, you talk about the history and the background of Talladega and the other things. I mean, certainly that's a lot of depth, you know, jumping into Indy. But even so, it's kind of the deep end of the pond. I mean, you know, just to take that particular leap, I mean, that's now you're in the A game at that point. And what a thrill. What an absolute thrill that must have been.
Well, it was, and it was at a time when Indy was actually, you know, Indy cars were at its heights. And, you know, I was in a 91 Lola, you know, so it wasn't like I was in the best, latest, greatest equipment, but that was okay. I mean, I learned quickly. I spent more time, I think, in the pace car than any other of the rookies that year. I mean, any time that track was open that I could be in a pace car, I was in the pace car. And then any time I could be in a race car, I was in a race car. So, at that time, you had the whole month of May, and that helped tremendously. So, you know, it's it's just a matter of how hard you're willing to work and how good you are and how helpful other people can be to help you be successful, and it all came together for me. So it was pretty cool.
So, Lynn, I have a question. This is Steve. When you did run the Indy, how many tracks did you run in a season when you were full on?
Well, I mean, 92 is my rookie year at Indy, and I only ran the Indy 500. And I only had a one race deal. I only had a one race sponsorship deal from JCPenney. And quite frankly, everybody, including Dick Simon, thought, that's it. You did it. You did well. You actually won rookie of the year, and that's it. It's all over. And I mean, I was 45 years old, so that's when most of the drivers are starting to retire anyway. So everybody thought, that's it. You're done. You did it. Go away.
Sure. One and done. Yeah.
But I was, every lap I got better, every lap. I mean, I was just feeling better and better and stronger and stronger and loving it more and more. And it literally at the victory banquet, I don't know where the hell it came from, but I said, we'll be back. And I remember seeing Dick's face in the audience going, what the hell is she talking about? So I had no other racing that year because Ford Motor Company had sort of stopped sponsoring me.
Well, Lynn, so, I'm going to need to break in because we got a couple seconds here before the break, and I want us to come back into that. And
hold that story. We'll finish that story. Come back.
Yep.
All right.
Okay.
We'll be right back at 4 Horsepower Grove and Rust right after these messages.
You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You might just love the Rat Bastards. The Rat Bastards Car Club is a family-oriented, non-profit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough, real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other, and love to drive them. Your build is our build, because that's the way car clubs are supposed to be. The Rat Bastards are a new class of old school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Find us at a cruise in all over the Puget Sound and on the Rat Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
More Horsepower Chrome and Rust after these messages.
Attention men under the age of 35. You know what really impresses the ladies? When a guy has a few drinks and later gets pulled over for buzz driving. That could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Oh, I know. You drive more carefully when you're buzzed. You've proven that hundreds of times. A woman admires that kind of confidence. And you've practiced how to speak if a cop does pull you over. Slowly, clearly, and politely, like, good evening, officer. And what woman doesn't find it adorable that you call it buzzed even though the law calls it drunk? You could kiss $10,000 goodbye, along with any chance of having a girlfriend. Buzzed, busted, and broke. Because buzz driving is drunk driving.
Hello, this is Zach with Cascade Campers. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
I'm jumping in with my clothes off!
Most party fouls are pretty dumb, but if you decide to drink and drive underage, you could lose your license and your freedom. Learn more at ultimatepartyfoul.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Yes, we're back with the second half of the Windshield View, and we were just getting into some of Lynn St. James racer information. Basically, she was launched her first race, came in as a rookie of the year, and everybody thought, that's great, you did it. And all of a sudden, she's telling us, no, that's not all. And first of all, I want to let everybody know, just go to lynnstjames.com for her website. So, Lynn, pick it up where we left off.
Well, thank you. So at the victory banquet, when I said we'll be back, nobody knew what that meant. And I basically went back to JCPenney and convinced them that if they could give me more money and they could get more sponsorship, that we could actually do a better job. So in 1993, I actually had a six-race program. So making a long story short, over 9 years of racing IndyCars, I was in 15 IndyCar races over 9 years. I never even got a whole season. And so, you know, Dick had always said, God, we could, you know, if only we could have had you run a whole season, we would have been so much better prepared going into the next season. You know, you just were always at a disadvantage because I was playing check, you know, it was like, basically I was catch up, yeah. playing catch up ball the whole time.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the way the cookie crumbled. Would I've loved to have more races, you bet, but oh, yeah. I am delighted or honored and whatever you want to call it. You fill in the blank for the fact that I got to do it at all. Yeah,
so you started with Dick Simon in 92 yeah. and through 95. And then you, in the meantime, you were kind of prepping up to do some stuff for Simon Scandia and, you know, the IndyCar, you know, series up through 2000, really.
Right. Well, as I say, it was over 9 years I was in 15 races. So, yeah. you know, including the 500 and some other races. But, you know, Dick had to sell his team and then the whole split happened. We don't want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, everything changed, you know, and I was caught in some of that and had to just scramble and do the best I could.
Yeah. So my earliest memories of you were in the 80s. I was a young kid, probably 13. And I was at Riverside during your 96 crash. It was one of the most remarkable motorsport events, incidents I ever remember seeing.
Yeah, everybody refers to that crash in 1986, you know, in the Ford Probe when there were three of us that tried to get through turn one and Doc Bundy decided that, you know, he had to get through there and it didn't work. And, you know, it was a pretty bad crash. It was the worst crash I'd had up to that point, but fortunately, all of us walked away, and yeah, you know, about $3 million worth of cars were destroyed but,
within seconds.
But, yeah, but anyway, you know, it was a tough deal to go through. I was afraid it might have ended my career, but in reality, it actually solidified some commitments that Ford Motor Company understood that I was the real deal and that I could handle the bad shit as much as I could handle the good stuff.
How long were you out of the car after that crash?
I was out a couple months.
That's not too bad. Yeah. If you ever get a chance to watch people take a good song to YouTube, I probably watched it 1,000 times.
Because you were there.
I was there. I was there in person. I was behind the fence.
I think it was worse for the people to watch it than it was for me. I only saw my missile, you know, but I think the ones that saw it, that saw all three cars and... You know, that was almost worse for the folks watching it.
Yeah. Sure. Well, and of course, when you're in the middle of it, you're not focusing on the big picture. You're focusing on, am I going to get through this?
Yeah.
Yeah. You only see what you can see. I mean, you know, which wasn't much.
Well, Lynn, this kind of what tells me is a lot of people do not probably that are out of the racing world that don't know, like me, don't understand the cost, the expense, the overhead and the stress of actually trying to race a full season. I mean, you're telling us where you were, how you started, how you got going. It kept going. You stayed with it for 9 years. But the fact is, racing is not an easy enterprise. It costs a lot of money, a lot of expenses, a lot of travel, and it really takes a lot of coin and backing to make it through a complete season. And the fact that you kept coming back and coming back, I think that sets you up for your future as being a spokesperson, as setting up some foundations. So kind of talk to us a little bit about how you took that spirit of perseverance and applied it to the next leg of your life.
Well, like, you know, I know a lot of other athletes, and I think they're always blown away about how hard all racers have to work to be able to generate the support to be able to race. You know, that just doesn't usually equate to people in other sports. So that's an eye opener in itself. And I started my foundation back in 1994 while I was still really at the height of my career. And I'm just, you know, when I realized that, I mean, I worked really hard and I was continuing to work hard, but if you could only work to benefit yourself, it's like, I mean, I was very fortunate to, you know, become involved with the Women's Sports Foundation and meet Billie Jean King and understand that, you know, I was only a cog in the wheel. I mean, I rested on the shoulders of others other female athletes, and that I really needed, if I was going to have any worth, that I really needed to make a difference for others. And I really felt good about that. So I started my own foundation, and I got involved with the Women's Sports Foundation and became their president. I created a driver development program before anybody knew what the hell driver development meant. I remember people saying, what is that? Well, now everybody has a driver development program. But it was all about just trying to basically tell young drivers what they didn't know. I mean, we all know what we don't, we all know what we know, but we don't know what we don't know. And if you can't let people know what they don't know to give them a leg up about how they might be able to get where they want to go, then, you know, the window will close. I mean, there's a very short, small window of opportunity that a young driver has. And if you're clueless or you're lost in the shuffle, that window closes. And you know what? There's somebody else right ready to jump into the seat. So I'm pretty proud of the fact I did that for over 25 years. And we had over 230 young drivers come through our program, and people like Danica Patrick and Sarah Fisher and Melanie Troxell and Aaron Crocker, and you know, a number of the young drivers that ended up actually getting somewhere with their careers. So, but it's all, I mean, I continue to make a difference. I work with the RPM Foundation and try to get to young people to realize, and not just young people, but to people to realize that there's opportunities to have a career, to be able to have hands-on skills, to be able to preserve the history of our vehicles, whether they be cars, motorcycles, or even boats. So, you know, if we don't have those skills continuing on, not only are the vehicles getting old, but the people that know how to work on them are getting pretty old. And we're going to lose those craftsmen and those artisans and those specialists that can pound metal and can fabricate and can, you know, do something other than pull something off a shelf and put it on a car. So, you know, if there's just a way to communicate to other people to say, hey, if you are inclined, the opportunity is here, but you got to be able to work hard. You got to have total dedication because it's not a 9-to-5 job, and you got to go out there and hustle because, you know, it isn't like, I don't know, it's just not that easy, but damn, is it fabulous? Is it fun? Is it wonderful? You know, so
every bit of it.
So hang on and, you know, get out there and figure out how you can do it.
It's funny, you know, in preparation for tonight, I was, you know, kind of folding through the net like you do, looking for information on, you know, who is our guest going to be and what is she about. And I found an article from a website, a magazine website called Drive Tastefully Quarterly. And it's from 2017. You probably remember the interview. This Fred, guy named Ted, I think his last name is pronounced Gushu, but I could be wrong. But I was chuckled kind of by the first paragraph of it. It says, despite her successful career as a celebrated activist and orator, to pigeonhole Lynn St. James as a feminist would completely undersell so much of her tremendous life story and why she chose to compete in motorsports from the beginning. It wasn't to prove a point or to forward any sort of agenda. It was pure and simple desire to drive as fast as possible, as often as possible. And it says, Lynn St. James on driving your ass off in a sport dominated by men. And I that this is going to be a fun evening.
Yes.
I'm all ears.
I don't think I've seen that article.
Oh,
actually,
gosh. I'll send you the link.
We'll forward it to you.
Yeah, I'll send you the link.
Yeah.
It's great.
I remember the interview, but I don't think I've seen the article.
So oh, yeah. It's a piece. It's February 8th, 2017. I will send it to you.
Now, I got to ask you, you're a female racer, and do you...
I'm a racer who happens to be...
Thank you. Slap me. Okay. Are you familiar with any racers of your ilk in the motorcycle realm? Because I used to do a show about motorcycling, and we had Sue Fish and others that were trendsetters for their day.
Well, you know, I can't name names, but I can tell you that I follow it. I mean, I know that actually I think there's so many more women that are active in motorcycle racing and motorcycle riding, and, you know, that motorcycles are – I remember years ago speaking to a whole group of women that were part of a club in motorcycles. So, and of course, one of my sheroes, I guess you'd call it, is the gal who's the flat track racer, Shayna Texter.
Mm, right, sure. Yep.
So, I mean, you know, she's just awesome, awesome, awesome. And so, yeah, I mean, I, as I said, I can't name their names right off the top of my head other than Shayna, but I follow what's going on out there so that I'm aware and I'm relevant And obviously, if it happens to be also female-centric, then I get a little more excited, period. But I don't just follow women, but I follow what's happening so that I know what's happening. I mean, it's like if you can't stay relevant, then you can't be effective.
Well, yeah. I'm 100%. And that was gonna, I was going to add, that leads me into another question is, what do you think about the state of the auto industry is in itself, and then also the whole younger generation joining into the world of cars and building and stuff? I mean, I think we've got a okay, there's less magazines, but to be honest, you turn on YouTube or Netflix or any of the 7 dozen other cable channels, and there are hundreds of car-related shows these days of every type you can imagine. I think, myself, it's a golden age again for the world of four wheels. What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's, first of all, it's a disruptive market right now. It's all over the map, and it's a very disruptive market. And it isn't happening in the traditional way. It's not happening through generations, through the cult and the culture. There's no muscle car era anymore. There's no era of particular vehicles that people gravitate to. So it's happening in a different way. It doesn't mean that people don't care. It's just that it's harder to find them. And we have to work harder to be able to address them, to talk to them, to relate to them. But it's not just like they don't exist. It's just they're coming from a different direction, and we have to speak to them in their language and not try to get them to conform to what we do.
Yeah, it's funny. We're finding, being a podcast the way we are, we talk a lot to people and with people who are all over the country in all different time zones and all different, elements of the sport and or the hobby, depends on what you like to call it. But, the way that this information propagates, like you say, it's not the traditional way anymore.
Yeah, I mean, we all used to read Car and Driver, Road
yeah,
Track,
exactly.
And we had our magazines, and that was our cult. That was our resource. And now, I mean, between drifting and rally crossing and,
sure.
I mean, it's all over the map, and it's with you, like you mentioned, YouTube. And so it's very fragmented. It's very disruptive, but it's very alive, and it's very vital, and it's very, it's very much out there. It's not dying the way a lot of people, the curmudgeons are talking about how it's dying. It's ridiculous.
Well, and what we like to do is highlight individuals like yourself who have been trailblazers in your industry and in your sport, because it gives hope for upcoming individuals who say, you know what, darn it, I can do this. There's nothing holding me back. I mean,
there's so many more women now that are, I just recently heard about this Rebel Rally, and then there's there's a couple, there's another one in Europe that's, the women are doing, amazing things. And so, that makes me realize, hell, I'm behind the eight ball, as far as what's already happening. And then, of course, we talked about the other stuff that's out there. So, I think, it's just different. It's just different. And that should not make us hold back or feel negative. It's just a matter of get on board, because we've got to be able to communicate and, as I say, stay relevant. But we also got to listen to what the new audiences and the new participants and the new active people, what they care about.
That's exactly right. We had, in fact, just a couple of weeks ago, we had as guests on the show a woman who's the president of an all-women's racing club in Spokane, Washington, on the east side of this state. And they are, they all built their own cars. They all do racing, drag racing and figure eights and stuff like that. And, they're active in that part of the country, getting their track happening and creating more events. And it's something that had we not, found them, I don't know what kind of, publicity they would have gotten. But, we try to do that for everybody that we bring in.
Well, That's cool.
Well, Lynn, listen, it's really been cool talking with you. I wish that we had more time. We'd love to have you back. We are going to put your website and your Facebook stuff up, and I promise you I will send you the link to that interview so you can see what nice things this guy said about you. But if you decide you want to go and look up Lynn St. James and her career, in case you are living under a rock and you don't know, it's L-Y-N St. James, and she's on YouTube, of course, and Facebook and all the other things. Lynn, thank you so much for stopping by.
Well, thank you. Thanks for promoting my website and RPM Foundation, and I've got a book out there if anybody really wants to know how I got through my journey.
Well, thanks, nice. Lynn. We appreciate it. And we'll be right back with more of the show.
Listen, as a hiring manager, I've got to tell you, the best job candidate isn't always the typical candidate. Sometimes they're a grad of life.
Meet the grads of life. Young adults of unique determination and experience. An ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Sometimes the best candidates aren't the ones you're used to.
Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent.
Stick around. We'll be back after these words.
Hey, car enthusiast, are you in need of a restoration and fabrication shop that turns old steel into rolling works of art? Then look no further than E-Company Customs Hot Rods and Restorations. E-Company Customs, that's Customs with a K, is the Northwest's fastest-growing restoration and fabrication shop, providing frame-off restoration, custom mods, upholstery, rust repair, hand-done metalwork, motor work, body and paint, and a whole lot more. To book an appointment, visit them at ecompanycustoms.com or stop by their shop at 15002 Suite A, Highway 99, Linwood, Washington. E-Company Customs, providing a stress-free experience to both new and returning customers.
This is Cody with Bow Wow Air-Cooled. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. A lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you.
When it comes to saving money, don't act like a baby.
Goo goo gaga.
Be the boss and make a budget.
I'm the boss, baby.
You're the boss of me.
I am the boss of you.
Are not.
M2.
Are not.
M2.
Need a little help?
Aren't you going to do any work?
I'm very busy delegating.
Create a personalized savings plan.
We can share.
You obviously didn't go to business school.
And get other tools and tips at feedthepig.org.
Well, it's time for Cars Confidential. And we are back with a story from the old car notebook.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, we got the old car notebook tonight.
missing the stories. I haven't heard one in a while.
This will be a good one. Yeah, you were out sick, and now you're here sick.
I'm here, sick.
Yeah, that's right.
You're always sick.
Now we're glad to have you back. So this one is actually from book one. It's called Old Cars Keep You Young at Heart. Now, I think we can all identify with that.
Oh,
I
yes.
can. Chuck Holmes was the original author. This was kind of cool. It goes, when I was 15 years old, I got bit by the desire to have my own car. Well, of course. It didn't matter that I didn't have a license. I wanted to get a car to fix up and call my own. Now, my dad told me that if I wanted a car, I'd have to go and get a job and buy it with my own money. How many times have we heard that? He didn't have a problem with me getting a car. He just wasn't going to fund it. Now, back then, it took a while to save up enough money for a car, but I finally had $50. Burning a hole in my pocket, and my dad and I went to a wrecking yard in South Seattle. How many wrecking... The first car I bought, it was a junk car. We wandered up and down the aisles. We looked at the hulks of old iron that still vaguely represented what had once been functioning and drivable cars. At about that time, I was certain we wouldn't find anything suitable for me. We rounded an aisle, and there it was, a 1940 Chevy business coupe. I was amazed and in awe. It was nothing like the junk we had been looking at so far. It sat there proudly displaying shiny light green paint on a pretty straight body. A peek inside revealed an interior that was in pretty good shape as well. We inspected it up one side and down the other and decided if the price was right, the car was right. So the owner of the yard told us it was towed in with a bad motor, and if I wanted it, I could have it for $50.
Oh, wow.
Bingo! We had a winner. So things are sure different on today's roads, but in 1957, my dad towed it home with his 55 Chevy two-door Bel Air. We got it down to our backyard, and I began my adventure. Without a driver's license, all I could do was work on the car, and work on it I did. This car planted the seed for a lifetime interest in rebuilding and restoring cars, and I went through a couple of parts cars getting it ready for my senior year at Highline High School in Burien. The first one was a real score. One of my good friends and I were walking in a semi-rural area when we spotted a 37 Chevy sedan sitting in the middle of a chicken coop. In fact, it may have actually been the chicken coop. This seemed like an odd place for a car. It raised our curiosity. I could certainly find a better use for the car than the current owner had, we found him standing on the back porch eyeing us with great interest. We approached him and asked why the car was sitting there acting as a shelter for his poultry, and he told us to follow him. We did, and he took us into the coop and opened the door of his car. It was in pretty fair condition other than the fact that it had no seats. The owner went on to explain that he had been a smoker, and one night he tossed a cigarette out the window. It flew back into the car without him realizing it. Before he knew it, the interior of the car had caught on fire. So not wanting to spend money on fixing it, he just parked it, took the seats out so the chickens could live in it. Oddly, that actually sounds like reasonably logical.
Yes.
He must have figured that the chickens weren't that attached to it. He told me if I could get it started, I could have it. On closer inspection, I discovered the car had only 37,000 miles on it. My buddy and I ran home, dragged back a battery, and to my surprise, it started right up.
Wow.
And it sounded like a kitten. A little air in the tires and an apple crate to sit on, and I got it home, driving down the back roads to avoid the local authorities. It ran great, and while I could have had the car whole and called it my own, I saw it as more of an engine for my 40. It was a 216 cubic inch six-cylinder, just like the one in the 40, So, being the inquisitive sort that I was and still am, I tore the engine apart. My dad had a friend, Mr. Griffin, who owned an auto parts store at Burien on First Avenue South. Knowing what I was up to, he said, well, if I was willing to work it off in labor, he'd give me a 235 cubic inch short block to build.
Wow.
He saw this as a great learning experience for me and as a way to make his knowledge, you know, shared with a younger motorhead in the making. So I thought it'd be pretty good deal to have a new engine that I could soup up, so I agreed, and I repaid him by cleaning up around the shop and mowing his yard and so on. He inspired me, helped me with my many questions. Mr. Giffen was a great mentor, and I spent that whole summer, when not doing things for him, working on the car. He gave me some great ideas. He really took an interest in my project. I remember him fondly and could never have repaid him for all the stuff he taught me. When I was done with the engine part of my mission, I had installed twin Stromberg carburetors and a split manifold with dual exhaust. Boy, it was going to run strong and sound smooth. Now, by the time it was completed, I'd spent two complete summers in the backyard getting my 40 ready for my senior year in high school.
Mm-hmm.
The engine and the rest of the running gear was tightened, freshened, or replaced, the paint polished, and the interior detailed. My car was ready for the road and its debut at school. My first stop was to pick up my girlfriend and then a couple of close buddies. Of course, a business coupe only had the front seat, and it was a narrow car to begin with, so we're all jammed in like sardines, but we did not care. This was a regular thing, and on Friday and Saturday nights, we could cruise Lou's Drive-In on 152nd Street and 1st Avenue and South Burien, and then over to the White Center Lou's, and from there we'd head on to the West Seattle and check out the action at Dick's Burgers, which is still a growing chain of old-style burger joints where young and old alike still hang out. Lou's is not there anymore, but the memories of fries and tartar sauce still linger. Tartar sauce.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of those guys.
Yes.
The girls in West Seattle like to jump into the car and ask us to head back to Lou's so their local guys would pursue them. It was all in good fun, and there weren't really any altercations. As time has gone on, I've run into several of them and swapped stories about the good old days. Another cool thing about the business coupe was the huge trunk. I could get five people in the trunk to sneak into the Valley Drive-In Theater.
Yes,
this went on for countless weekends until one night we got caught. On that particular night, there was an extra guy that wanted to tag along. That made six guys in the trunk, and just that much more crowded. By the time we got to the entrance and started to approach the ticket booth, they'd all had too much time impersonating a package of hot dogs, and they were hanging and banging onto the trunk lid trying to get me to stop the car. I jumped out, popped the trunk, and they all started piling out. Needless to say, the ticket booth guy was on to our ongoing scheme, saying he recognized the car. He wasn't going to let anybody in the car get in, and after some batting of her eyelashes and pleading by my girlfriend, he let her and me in with the car, but that left the boys from the trunk on foot. I'm sorry it turned out that way, but I did my best to enjoy the movie and the time alone with my girl. I've been through a lot of cars since that first Chevy, and I have a 40 Chevy Special Deluxe Custom Coupe today that takes my mind back to that first one every time I get in it. See, that's the thing about old cars. They keep you young at heart. The six-body trunk.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
And that particular line lives today. When I've told the story, my wife won this 51 Hudson at a raffle a while back. And the first thing she saw when we got it home and, you know, she opened the trunk, she says, that's a six-body trunk. Yes, It is a six-body truck.
My son's 89 Crown Vic is a six-body truck.
Easily, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Oh, sure. And a couple of dogs on
and
top of it.
And a couple of
yeah,
dogs. That thing's half the car.
Yeah. The bowl potato salad.
Man. as we always say, you know, the Old Car Nut book series is a tremendous series. You know, there's three books in the series. You can get them on Amazon. Or you can get it at oldcarnutbook.com. And it's just a pleasure to have David Dickinson, you know, allow us to read the stories. We took a little vacation from them, but, you know, Lance Lambert's books are good, too.
Yes, they are.
So it's good to have this one back.
You know, I wanted to take a little... Speaking of junkyards...
Junkyards?
Well, how to turn junk cars into billions.
Sure, find one that's plated in gold.
No, Copart, C-O Part, Inc., has nearly 200,000 vehicles available in its junkyards, ranging from supercars to suburban people carriers, some slightly damaged and some total wrecks. And basically, Copart founder Willis Johnson, a gold chain wearing Oklahoma native who just turned 72, is worth over $1.9 billion, with the junkyard spread across U.S., Brazil,
so
U.K., Mideast. He's a junkyard operator. He's taken Copart and taken one junkyard and spread them to dozens and dozens and dozens.
So what he really is a website guy.
Well, he's a junkyard owner.
He owns one junkyard. He doesn't own thousands.
He owns junkyards all over the world.
Really?
Yes. Sure. Copart Incorporated, one of the largest junkyard companies, and his son-in-law has about an $800 million stake in it. And,
well, good for them.
Yeah, they're for Berlin, U.K., Mideast, Brazil, U.S., I think that's great.
I wonder what kind of junkyard cars you find in
Brazil. Here's the kicker. Driving the growth are technology advancements that have made cars more expensive to fix and thus are more likely to be written off by insurers, as well as international expansion, the company said on a September earnings call.
Absolutely.
And drivers being distracted by phones.
Stay right here for more Horsepower and Rust. And this week's trivia question.
Horsepower.
I'll learn how to talk.
Horsepower, crust, and Rome. That's right.
Roma.
And toast.
And toast.
You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You might just love the Rat Bastards. The Rat Bastards Car Club is a family-oriented, non-profit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough, real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other, and love to drive them. Your build is our build, because that's the way car clubs are supposed to be. The Rat Bastards are a new class of old school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Find us at a cruise in all over the Puget Sound and on the Rat Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
Hang on till right after these messages.
Hey y'all, I'm Blake Shelton. I love that country music connects people all over this great nation, but unfortunately so does something else, childhood hunger. 15 million children struggle with hunger in America. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks works to rescue our surplus food to help provide billions of meals to families in need across the country. Join the fight against hunger at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
In 95, I helped tow your trailer. In an 09, it was sparks from me, your chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
This is Donnie Smith. You've been listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. Enjoy yourself.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car-crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
Help us if you can, you're an El Camino, El Camino man, only.
Hey, welcome back. It's Around the Wheel. This is where we talk about all the upcoming cool stuff. And, ladies and gentlemen, we also regale you with the results of the trivia contest question that we have every week. And, of course, the big deal there is that whoever wins gets their picture and or name posted on our website, holding and or being pointed to the bucket of horse pepper, chrome and rust, barn find dust,
yes,
which, as we know, Shane has literally tons of that he pours over all of his cars so yes. that people will think he found them in a barn and they'll be worth 12 yes. times as much.
Well, because I do find most of them in a
you
barn.
You did. In fact, that Studebaker pickup is pretty much right in a barn.
Yeah. And I got my Impala out of a barn, too.
You did. Shane has a 62 Impala with one of the original shaker hoods. And
oh,
I say
wow.
that because the hood isn't on there real good, and it shakes every time he starts the car. And the hole that's cut in there for the air cleaner.
Oh,
well, that's
yes.
a whole separate issue.
Yes. Is it low-rided because there's...
No, the suspension's actually pretty good.
Oh, okay.
It's all there.
Yeah, it's all there. It's good. So, yeah, last week's question was kind of a cool one. And it was actually, I got some grief from our friend of the show, Nathan Lipinski, because he said, it could be almost any number. So I'm just going to say one.
Yes.
The question was, how many Beatles were sold in their first year of introduction in the United States?
And I said,
it's not a number that most people would think of. And so Nathan, of course, being the wise guy that he is, came up with, you know, the trick answer. Actually, in the first year, the very first year of introduction in the States. Now, this is not worldwide production.
This is true.
First year in
was
the States.
Was that 57?
No. It was before that.
Oh, really?
First year, the Volkswagen Beetle sold only 330 cars.
What year was that?
In the United States.
47. Yeah, 47.
47.
Oh, I can only imagine.
It's right after the war.
Right after the war, yeah.
47, though.
Yeah.
And look at the shape of that thing compared to what was out on the road.
Well, yeah.
The size compared to
That's what yeah. I'm saying. The size. Like yeah. half the size of any
I'm
other car.
I'm not buying one of them there
German cars. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Not at 25 cents a gallon.
330 cars. So, yeah, and not surprisingly, nobody got the answer. So, listen to this. The bucket of barn find dust doubles for this week's question.
Oh,
and I'm going to keep it?
Yeah, you have to take it home with you.
I need more dust.
Oh, yeah, right. So this week's question is also one of those, how dare you ask me this question
yes.
kind of questions?
Yes.
So the question is, Ford, of course, has a lot of firsts. Ford was responsible for tons of
yep.
them. The first, you know, automated assembly line, blah, 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 tons of stuff. Car for the masses. The first Fords had what kind of engines in them? First Fords had what kind of engines in them? If you think you know, and you better be pretty smart on this one, then Shane thinks he knows.
Don't say anything, Shane.
When we're off the air, I'm going to ask him. And if he knows, I will brag about how cool he is next week. And if he doesn't, I will mercilessly pound him.
Right.
Because he should know this. He's probably fixed one or two in his time. Anyway, if you think you know, the first Fords had what kind of engines in them, please send us an email at contactus@horsepowerchromeandrust.com or go to our Facebook page and answer the question there. You can send it to us on Messenger like Nathan does all the time or whatever you know method of communications you like. You, too, could win
yes.
your chance to hold the veritable bucket of barn find dust and thereby quadruple the value of whatever vehicle you pour that crud onto.
Well, and it's kind of interesting because way back in the day, they there were electric cars were pretty popular in the early days. And even cars that burnt, supposedly, vegetable oil back in the day and even making car bodies out of hemp products, I've heard, was
something. The Willie Nelson special.
Yes. that's cannabis style, hemp.
Willie could smoke his car if he wanted
yes,
to.
Yes, he could. Cheech and Chong.
And that means we are
up
headed out.
Smoke.
It's been really cool. Nice to talk with Lynn St. James. We're going to put her website up on the Facebook page as well. Thanks for the great stories. Thanks for liking and following our website and Facebook page. For Shane Osborne and Steve Johann, I'm Brady Wright saying keep your eyes on the road, your hands on the wheel, your foot to the floor, your face right up against the windshield. Next week, we do it again on Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
See you then.